This is Circulating Ideas, recorded live at the 2019 American Library Association Annual Conference in Washington, D.C. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Dr. David Lankus, director of the University of South Carolina School of Library and Information Science and author of The Atlas of New Librarianship. With library budgets constantly shrinking, it's getting harder and harder to provide the resources your library patrons want and need. That's why the folks at Mometrics Test Preparation created the Mometrics e-Library. Through their e-Library portal, Mometrics offers study guides and practice questions for over 1,800 different exams covering college entrance, graduate school, nursing, medical, teacher certification, civil service, I'm counting this on my fingers, I'm running out of fingers, and many other careers and fields of study. All fully customizable and at a fraction of the cost of printed books. It's like having an entire library of test prep materials all at your fingertips. So, save space, save paper, and save money with Mometrics eLibrary. To get a free demo and 10% off your first purchase, visit goelibrary.com and let them know you came from Circulating Ideas by using the promo code PODCAST. That's goelibrary.com, promo code PODCAST. So Dave, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
I wanted to start off with, you did the Atlas of New Librarianship, you've done the New Librarianship Field Guide. What would you say is the current state of new librarianship?
The current state of new librarianship is trying to figure out what we call it, but it's been interesting. I've been spending a lot of time looking internationally, and so some amazing things going on in Aarhus, in Denmark, some great things just all over the world. And some folks, this idea of how do we link and really become part of the community is a thread, and it has different names. In Denmark, they're talking about it as a community hub. In the Netherlands, they talk about it as community librarianship, which is, if you use that phrase in the UK, you get in trouble because that's often where they're replacing librarians for it with community members and such. So
right. It
really is, and as I said in the book way back when, it's librarianship. And so what I see is you're seeing more and more and more of it in terms of how we think about it, in terms of how we do services. And now we're coming up to some really hard points, which is how do you measure it? And then how do you manage for it? And what's the back end look like?
All right. Well, I saw you had just posted a conversation you had with Marie Ostgaard from Aarhus in Denmark, where you talked about the library as a movement. Can you talk about that concept a little bit?
So we were on, and I hate to admit my infidelity here, but we were on another podcast. And
shame.
I know, talking about a network of international librarians. And in there, she made this phrase where she says, we really see the library as a movement. And I began thinking and talking with her, and so I just finally got together and said, let's talk about this. Because, ironically, I do a lot of talking about librarians, and we talk about the library as something librarians build. But her concept was much nicer in that it was inclusive. The librarians are part of that, community's part of that, partners are part of it. And it's not the building. I mean, they may have a building. It's not the collection. It may have a collection. But it really is a community pushing towards a common goal. And so I think it's taking some of the ideas, I don't want to say my ideas, some of the ideas that I were working with and pushing it forward to, okay, let's really talk about the library as a place for multiple people doing multiple things and not saying that this distinction between librarians build this, well, community builds it. So that's just a fascinating concept that she brought up and she's been working with and they're certainly doing in Denmark and that I begin really got intrigued by and I'm starting to work through.
All right. So do you think that changes the way? I mean, you've always kind of had a certain way, and I'll let you use your exact words of what the mission of the library is.
Mm-hmm. Is that making you rethink any of that or how to word some of that? And can you
sort of restate that for the listeners? Just
sure. So the mission of librarians is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. Which could, you know, the simple version of that is we want to make life better for our community members, and we do that through learning, and that learning is very local. And so And you can break that down into lots of different things. Let's face it, that's a pretty generic mission. I mean, you know, it's 15 words.
Right.
You know, and so it matters how you break it down. So I don't think the mission necessarily changes. But like I say, it's, and I don't even think some sort of how that looks changes. But what we're really beginning to see, once again, is how does it change how we structure ourselves and manage that? You know, it's in the conversation, I think Marie said something to the effect of, we want to give without any potential reward. And I said, well, that's great. You do get tax money to do this stuff, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so it's finding that idealism, which is essential, and the passion is important, and linking it then to the structures to make it happen. And so that, to me, is increasingly fascinating.
Okay. You've always kind of talked about the difference between supporting librarians versus libraries. You mentioned that even a minute ago about the, doesn't matter about the building and the collection. It's the people themselves that are making the profession. Is that still kind of where your mindset is, that we're really building the people, and no matter where they are, that's who we're looking at as far as librarianship?
It is. I mean, the true collection of the library is the community. And I don't mean that just as in the people we serve, but that's where expertise is. That's where interest is. That's where the definition of improve comes from. That's where new ideas come from. So that's still very much at the forefront of what we're talking about. And the question becomes, how can we expand that? You know, I write and talk to librarians about being librarians. And when I look at the more recent work on library as social infrastructure and such, which is getting a great amount of well-deserved play. It's okay, but how do we not just to, you know, we've got a good foundation here, but how do we now invite people into the library and also share those concepts? And that's why I'm learning.
Right. Well, we kind of got away from it, but you mentioned a little bit earlier about in your conversation with Marie that they talked about reward and what kind of reward do we get for being alive. There was a Twitter dust up of late, just regarding, and this is just the latest in anything about the movers and shakers from Library Journal, and it kind of happens every year. People kind of getting a dust up about it. So, what are your thoughts on sort of awards in general, and then maybe even this specific one of how they award things like that, and just in general? I mean, you know, because we give out a lot of awards. So what do you think about that as a reward for librarians?
I think the official term you're looking for is Twitter dumpster fire. I think that's a term of art now. There are a lot of people on that list that do amazing and brilliant, wonderful things, which is sort of what began that discussion was. And I'm not... I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, which is I love to hate Twitter. I think that's what that means. But I'm on there, and I was just noticing that more and more when I go there, it's like defensive. Like you open the app and duck. I sometimes physically duck. And this was just, it started as a, does anyone know what these movers, if any of these mover shakers actually did anything? And it started with, I know a lot of them. Yes, they have. And then it just turned into this bit of catharsis where I just went on and was like, you know, these are great people. And we need to get over the fact that if one person gets an award, that doesn't mean that the other person doesn't. I mean, yes, technically they don't. But that idea that by rewarding people, we don't diminish the work of those who did not get the reward.
Right.
And so I'm sure every field has this. But the movers and shakers, particularly because it started a little rocky, really is a lightning rod for this. That idea you know, that only certain people can be seen as innovative. Unless you get that award, it doesn't. And then that turns into, well, why are they more innovative than me and all this other stuff? And I can understand some of that conversation. And when it's in a constructive way about how can we ensure we get the right people, how can we ensure we're promoting the right things, I'm all for it. But when it turns into, I don't like that person, and we need to be much more positive and supportive. And I've been working... It was, like I say, it was a bit of a catharsis because what I did after this discussion, because it went back and forth, was I instantly expanded the number of Twitter followers that I was following. I let me look at this and hear from you, because I realized that over the years it was getting more and more narrow, and I was hearing the same. And they're great voices and they're great friends, but they're also ones that are critical. And what I needed was a wider slot. And so since that's happened, I've had a much more renewed relationship with Twitter.
That's good.
And but yeah, the bottom line is, we give out awards. People should be recognized. And as a field, we need to support that recognition and understand that it's not a slight to those who aren't recognized.
Right. And yeah, there's certainly always kind of a tinge of jealousy sometimes in there of just, well, again, that they got the award, I didn't. And then some of it is, sure, you're not always going to agree with somebody who gets an award. I mean, you're not, no matter what the award is, whether it's in your profession or not, you just happen to know more about your profession. I mean, there's people that argue about who wins the Oscars, too.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah. They gave a much better performance. Well, that doesn't make the other person bad.
Right, yeah.
And just because you don't like a project doesn't mean it wasn't a good project or doesn't mean it didn't impact that community necessarily. But you do bring a good point of expanding kind of your window on social media, especially of expanding out to get different voices in there. Because you do kind of get that where, for a while, certainly how I do it, I'll follow people for a while and then I'll start narrowing it down to the people that I really want to hear from. But then, yeah, you get to the point where you've narrowed it down so far that you're in an echo chamber finally, and it's just everybody agrees with me.
Yeah.
And you don't hear those voices that's going to challenge what you're thinking, and that's going to what stir new thinking in you, I think. So.
Yeah. The other, so I'm coming off of a year of forced reflection. Let's just leave it at that. Medicine is fun. And coming back and talk about retaking Twitter, but it's also retaking an optimistic stand, which is one of the things that I've found is I have a great concern in social justice, as many of us do. And there's a spectrum of people, and spectrum makes it even sound like there's a continuum. There's all these different views and this really complex relationship. And if you try and absorb them all, or you try and be all things to all people, and you try and get up and say, libraries are great, but now let me give you the 12 pages of the things we need to work on. It's not that those 12 pages are unimportant. We need to work on some serious stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I still believe that libraries are great. And so being able to see that message and feel comfortable in getting that message out is also important. And it's related, right? Because on one hand, if you go out and you say libraries are great, you get a backlash of, once again, no, they need to work on these things. And I can say, you can do both. It's like the awards. It's like, this person did a great job. No, they didn't do all these things. Like, yeah, but they still can do a great job, and we can still talk about when
right.
you do those. And so this is my attempt to sort of re-grab that, why I love this field and why I want to promote this field. And yes, I want to help fix this field, and there are many people better equipped to do it, but you know, if I have anything of a platform, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to say it's worth working on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can use your platform, like I try to use this podcast platform and lots of other platforms, to advance other people's voices and say, mm-hmm. you should listen to this person over here. This person knows what they're talking about.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, when I moved from professor to director, so administration, it's increasingly, you know, let me tell you about the great work that Lucy Santos-Green is doing over here. Let me tell you about this fabulous work that Kim Thompson's doing over here. Let me tell you about the stuff that Dick Coya is doing over here in copyright stuff. You know, now it's my job to really promote the other people who are doing it. And I have to say, I love it. It's, you know, I feel less, I guess I'm still a salesman, but I feel a little bit less as a self-interested one now.
Gets to... So yeah, as you said, you've had some time off for some health issues, but you're going to be returning to work soon. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to, kind of on your first day back, to really jump back into it? Because we talked sort of the last time you were on the show, we were talking about setting up the Knowledge School kind mm-hmm. of at South Carolina. So
the Knowledge School is still where we're headed. That's our theme, which is it's not just enough to say we teach future librarians. We really want to be an organization that teams with librarians and faculty and staff and alumni and anyone else who's interested to go out and make a good positive impact. So that intellectual is still developing. We're working right now. It's not official, but it will be momentarily. Sari Feldman's going to come on as a new fellow at the school, so she's going to give us lots of input. We want to build that program. But where we want to focus this year is on being agile and innovative in how we deliver our instruction. And that might sound boring, but things like we don't do continuing education development by putting a professor in front of a group of 30 people, charging them $3,000 and hoping for the best. How can we be much more agile with that? How can we create certificates and master's degrees so that as new trends emerge, we can be offering courses and degrees that minute as opposed to having to go through a 12-year process? And so it's a little inside baseball for people who aren't in LIS education, but what our goal is to make sure that the profession and the education are linked past accreditation, but really on a daily basis to say, you know, here's an important thing that our librarians need to know for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. Great. We can go ahead and make sure our students and people, we can accredit that, we can give them the degrees they need, which can then turn into salary adjustments and wage adjustments to value the labor they're providing.
Right. Well, speaking of kind of getting into the classroom, the accreditation kind of end of things, just library school in general, is there any issue in particular that you think library schools in general need to be moving toward? I guess your knowledge school thing is where you are looking to move toward, but anything that you see as sort of the field in general that you feel like we're not getting to yet or we need to get to, or is everybody doing a pretty good job?
Well, I think we're doing a pretty good job. I mean, there are many people who are going to talk about whether we get the right mix of theory and practice and how much people are ready for the first day of their job versus how much their 20th. They're important conversations. They're ongoing. But to me, the thing that we as a profession, but particularly library schools, have to nail down are how do we prepare reflective individuals who are ready to go out and face it? How do we prepare empathetic individuals? How do we prepare people who do self-reflection and understand self-care? How do we do something where people know they know thyself because they're going to be the primary interface back and forth? And they're not soft skills, as many call it. One, they're not soft skills, and then I'm not talking about they need to know how to network and present well. This is really how do we look at the empathetic individual and how they can improve their community. And that's hard because we don't want to do therapy, and we do only have a limited amount of time, but the idea of working with students today, it's not enough to write the book, it's not enough to write the paper, it's not enough. What you need to also spend time on is, are you okay? And this is what you need to remain okay. And then this is taking that foundation. This is what the people coming up to you from your community have the same issue.
Right.
And you need to be prepared to work with them. Whether it's in a public library context where you have lots of issues from homelessness to, you know, people wanting a new career, et cetera. But even in higher education where we're dealing with homelessness and people wanting to figure out their careers, that idea of having librarians that are well-grounded people that work in the meaning business, and that means they need to be able to build relationships with individuals and communities.
Right. Yeah, because I hear sometimes, I haven't heard it for a while, but there was always people saying, oh, they need to teach Microsoft Word and presentation techniques. And
Yeah. It's
like, well, just go get a lynda.com course and learn that stuff. That's not what you're paying thousands of dollars to get a graduate degree in.
We hope not. But, and well, that's the other part of it is, back to the agile and what's fun things to work on, which is how do we take all the, you know, when you tell a librarian or you tell a student, go do lynda.com or listen to this podcast or go to the 3,000 webinars that are now currently available, how can you go and grab all of these, turn it into something that's a coherent form of education, then how can we as a university accredit that to say, mm-hmm. you've done the work, we can make sure that with quality and with rigor that you do know this stuff. It doesn't necessarily have to come from a class. And
right.
So we want to be able to build that kind of ability.
Okay. Well, before I moved away from library school in general, I wanted to, we had a conversation last night, and I didn't know that before. Can you talk a little bit about how University of South Carolina, even before you were there, kind of got into distance education? Because I thought the early days was an interesting model.
The early days are an interesting model. So University of South Carolina, we call it distributed education. We still do. I hate it, but we do. Yeah, it was an early proponent with people like Ted Roper, or Fred Roper, who was the dean at the time. And then it was, Dan Barron just did incredible stuff. And we began doing two-way satellite broadcasts. And so in the very early 90s and even before that, we were in studios sending video to Greenville and two-way back and forth conversations. And so we've really always pushed in terms of online education. I think we're now to the point where online education has matured. So we have our Blackboard site and asynchronous. And there are lots of people seeing what it should be. I'm much more interested in how we build communities and connections over these, how we build a network so that once people graduate, they're still part of a network, building a mentorship network. So it's not the technology that's driving online education. It's the building of a passionate missionary core of information professionals going out to make the world a better place and supporting each other in doing it.
Right. And it's great now that all these programs can reach out beyond just people who can physically come to the classes and reach out throughout the country, if not the world.
Well, and that's what we're working on is the world, right? Because sometimes when you're going up and you're proposing something to the board that may seem like crazy, being able to connect in with someone who's done it in Denmark or someone who's done it in South Korea, et cetera, and building that kind of connection, that really changes the view of things.
Yeah. Well, Denmark is doing great things.
Yes, yes they are.
Sorry, I do have one more question about library school. This is sort of a broad context thing. What is the difference between library science and information science?
Library science and information science, in an evolutionary way, he said, it really is one, I don't want to say grew out of each other, but the idea that library science has been looking at how do we function and work in the institution of a library, how do we deal with some core knowledge around how you organize information, classification, cataloging, how do you look in terms of user behavior, search behavior, etc. Information science takes a lot of that. It adds to it a lot of things coming out of psychology and particularly communications and looks in a much broader context. I'm not a big hard boundaries kind of person, so I always kind of think of it as who's having this conversation more than what it looks at. And I think that, you know, that line gets fuzzy back and forth, and I'm okay with that. There's a lot that we can learn from computer science. There's a lot that computer science can learn from libraries. There's a lot that we can all learn from what's happening in different sectors in education. And so I don't get hung up too much on that. So I don't know if there's a hardcore line. Because it really comes down, like I say, at the end of the day, library science and really information science have been spending a lot of time on structures and tools. And what I'm interested in is both of those moving much more towards impacts and understanding the impacts that we get out of those things.
And you've talked in the past about how words matter, of how we say things, what we call the people who come into a library matters. If you call them a customer, that means one thing. If you call them a user, that means one thing. If they call them a patron, that means one thing. So are you still on the user end of that? And do you still feel as strongly about that? Member is where you were. I'm sorry. Member is where you are. Are you still on the member train?
I'm still on
train?
The... Right. And so in 5 seconds, because I know we're doing that live and running out of time. But here it is, which is... what we call it amongst ourselves. As a profession, as a discipline, when we sit down, teach, learn, talk amongst ourselves, we need a term. I'm a strong proponent of member just because it changes up the thinking. What folks within the community, within the library community and the people they're working with and serving, that's a very local decision. Neighbors, users, customers, consumers, blah, 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 blah. Because it should be negotiated. And so, but yeah, I'm still a big proponent of members. And in that conversation with Marie, we're starting our list of terms we need to retake, library being one of them, right? We need to get rid of the nostalgia. And I think she convinced me we need to put user, we can rehabilitate user on that list. And so I'm not there yet, but that's why I'm still a member.
Yeah. I think listening to that conversation is why I got confused on that.
Yeah.
Of the user. I was like, he's on the user side. Not yet.
Not yet.
Getting
we'll,
there.
We'll retake it, but not yet.
Yeah, no, because I feel like library is the strong term. I mean, a lot of it is from nostalgia, so yeah, you're right that we do need to evolve that into something else.
Right.
But you say library to people, that's just, you know, that's all those Pew results, 98% approval. Just hearing, like, just knowing about libraries. They don't know what libraries do.
Right.
But people support them.
Well, and on our education side, the word library gets in our way two ways. I would be quite frank. Love it, powerful, extremely good, except that 18-year-olds think that you go into a school of library and information science to become a librarian, which at the undergraduate, they don't. And so part of it is it's too well-known, whether nostalgia or not, they identify it with an institution type. And the other part is we get regular calls from the physics department asking if we can come over and talk about how we do citations and such, because they think we are the library. And we work closely with them, but we have... It's an academic discipline. And so what we're wrestling with at South Carolina, and I know a lot of schools are, which is how do we make sure that we communicate to the right stakeholders so that we don't stop a conversation before it ever begins? And it's really tough. How do you use it in the retaken way of library, but at the same time knowing you need to retake it? And so it's cart horse problem.
Right. Well, I want to bring up one more topic that I think we have time to tackle. and this is... Well, one we could talk about for a long time, but privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So privacy is pretty much a core value of our profession. But when we're looking at AI and big data that's really tempting to us to be able to give us all these great things, how do we balance that with the privacy of our members or users or patrons, whatever you want to call them?
Right.
How do we balance that with the, I think, great things that AI and big data can bring to us? I mean, because we can make all kinds of great decisions with that, but we need to strip out that personalizable data. Well, so how do we do that?
And in what context do we need to do it? And the short answer to this is actually the same answer when we were talking about library neutrality and the idea of, you know, all books, all people, all meetings, really. And that is the idea that we need to get into the gray. We need to get into the weeds and we need to get in the nuance world, right? I think a lot of time we say privacy is a core value of librarianship, and therefore it means we will never keep personal data ever, never forget it. Fine. But if we don't teach our members, if we don't teach our communities what that means, what's the trade-off, what's the consequence, then we're not really improving our community's sense of privacy. We're making ourselves feel better. And right. So I think the answer is we need to have the discussion, we need to have the scholarship, and we have some amazing librarians who do go well beyond the sort of it's our code of ethics and into let's talk about it, what's the research, what's the impact.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to ask is that we did talk about this last night as well. You have moved to the South recently.
I have.
I assume you have integrated y'all into your vocabulary.
I have. Y'all be proud of me. So, first of all, I have family from the South from multiple generations ago. But so it's like going back. But yes, I've done it, and I now even understand the difference between y'all and y'alda. Y'all to come, you'd have a good time, and so I'm getting there. I think it's six generations to become a true Southerner. So we've just begun the immigration process.
Well, is there anything else in your transition from New York to the South that has been difficult or delightful?
Delightful. What's delightful is a lot of issues on race, a lot of issues that is stereotypically in the North, we sort of think, oh, that's a Southern problem. What it is what I've been delighted to do is come to the South and realize this is an open conversation that is nowhere near solved, but is at least one that is happening more in the open side. And the other is, and I know this sounds absolutely like I'm kissing up, but that idea that there are some amazing libraries. School libraries in the Southeast are the strongest and best libraries that I've ever seen. The laws there, the policymakers there, the education's there, the schools support them. It's fabulous. And I think that's a platform that we can really use to continue and help the wonderful advocacies going on through ALA and AASL to push it forward.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Dave, for coming on.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta with support from listeners like you. Find out how you can help by going to circulatingideas.com and clicking on support. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice, and help others find the show by leaving a rating or review. You can follow the show on Twitter @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening, and keep circulating your ideas. To get 10% off your first purchase and a free demo, visit goelibrary.com and use that promo code podcast. That's goelibrary.com, promo code podcast.